Good evening. This time of year, spooky stories of the paranormal appear all over the place as Halloween draws near. This holiday, as I've mentioned in a previous podcast, has little to do with Spain, though there are some traditions here that might resemble it somewhat, like distant relatives. But that doesn't mean Spain doesn't have its share of scary stories, unusual mysteries, and keeping with the spirit of the season, I want to share one with you today. Last year I talked about Spain's great witch hunt in the early 1600s, the witches of Zugarramundi, but today I'm going to talk about one of the most famous, if not the most famous, paranormal legend in recent history, a story that gripped the country when the news came out in the early 1970s, so much that it was news all over the country, and it has managed to survive to this day as reporters, writers, and investigators continue to debate aspects about what was true and what wasn't, if it's a hoax, if it isn't, and they're all trying to provide the quote-unquote definitive truth about what went on there. It's a truly interesting story here. Now, I first heard about this phenomenon from my former roommate, Pepe, a dear friend of mine from those early days when I first arrived in Spain. And though our lives have taken us in different directions, we're still good friends, even though we don't get a chance to see each other that often. Anyway, Pepe was a big fan of the paranormal, and he was also a serious night owl, even more than me, which is saying a lot because I rarely get to bed before 1 or 1:30 in the morning. Anyway, he would listen to some show on the radio, I can't remember the name of it now, talking in the early 90s, which featured stories of mysteries and the unknown and so on. And many mornings after that, we'd be having our morning coffee, and he'd say to me, "You wouldn't believe what I heard last night." And then I'd stir my coffee and ask what, and he would proceed to tell me about UFOs in Cuenca, chupacabras in Leon, or ghosts in Aragon, or whatever happened to be the topic of conversation the night before. And now one day he told me about the Caras of Belmeth. And he said, "This is absolutely true," he swore. "And they still don't know what it's all about." And Pepe was a good storyteller, so he had me really into it and wanting to see this place, which I haven't seen yet. But let me tell you what the story is all about. The town is called Belmeth de la Moraleda, or just simply Belmeth. And it's in the province of Jaén, which is located in the northern part of the region of Andalusia. If you come down from Madrid to the, you know, to south of Spain, Seville, Granada, and Cádiz, and places like that, well, it's the first province that you go through from, if you go straight down from Madrid. And Belmeth is sort of tucked in these remote mountains called the Magina Mountains, or Magina Mountains, to the south of this capital, Jaén, and it's surrounded by olive groves, the way most of the towns in that province are. Not a very big population, I think it was around 2,000, maybe 2,500 in the early 70s, now it's down to 1,500. It was a low-key, modest town, the way many were back then. We are talking about the deep Spain of the latter years of the Franco regime in a part of Spain that certainly would have been somewhat behind the times, a town steeped in all the traditions that were important in Spain at that time. Anyway, this story takes us back to 1971, August to be precise, when a woman named Maria Gomez Cámara was cooking in her kitchen, and she looked down on the floor and noticed a stain on it. And as she looked at it, she started to realize that it had this figure, this image of a human face, and it was sort of looking up at the ceiling or even sort of looking at her. That would have freaked me out. It was sort of like one of those religious icons, Byzantine style icons. And the image, the color was dark. It was, I guess it would almost look like a photographic negative, if you can recall the Shroud of Turin and the sheet that was wrapped around the body of Jesus, and that later, according to the legend there, left the image, a print of the image of Christ's body on the cloth. Well, it was sort of like that. And Maria, when she saw this, she was sort of amused by it and thought it kind of resembled an image, a famous Byzantine-style image of Jesus from the Cathedral of Jaén, the capital of the province. Now, I've seen this image, and I've seen the one that you see on the on this podcast is the one we're talking about, more or less. And they don't look that much alike. But anyway, the one that's on the podcast isn't the original. The original didn't last very long. It got destroyed shortly afterward. Basically, Maria and especially her son decided to just pick away at it, destroy the image, and they put a whole other layer of cement over where it was. But a new one appeared in the very same spot not long afterwards, like a week or two after. Suddenly, you saw this image again, which must have been pretty freaky. Now, that also made it look like a miracle, or gave rise to the idea of a miracle. And so this sort of started out as a religiously motivated event, and suddenly people from the nearby towns, the faithful, were coming to the town to see it. Then word spread, first to Seville, and then to Madrid, where the daily newspaper El Pueblo in early 1972 got wind of it, and they sent a reporter down to find out what that was all about, and they published this famous article saying that something is going on in this town, and it just went viral. The interest in the phenomenon rocketed. It was front page news. It was talked about on the television, and it even got international press. And then people from all over Spain flocked to Belmuth to see what was up. Reporters, paranormal investigators, even officials. Poor Maria says they didn't even have time to cook anymore. There was just constant flows of people going into their house to see what it was. Even the church got involved, obviously, because if they were saying it was an image of Christ, they want to see if it really was or wasn't. You know, these type of apparitions did happen every once in a while, according to tradition. Anyway, the believers referred to it as either a miracle or something, a sign of evil, something negative. And then there were some who said they had heard voices. I think Germán de Argumosa, who was a famous investigator, and then he was listening to these voices, and they were asking for help. And then the other one was asking for the floor to be dug up, which is what they did, or part of it at least. And when that happened, they discovered bones from the 12th century from a former cemetery that used to be there and had been covered with the houses. Now, that's just a classic part of these stories. There's always a cemetery right under these houses where there's a poltergeist normally. Although this wasn't really a poltergeist in the sense that there was no, there were no moving objects, none of that sort of stuff, no sounds, no doors slamming, just these images, these faces that were appearing on the floor of her kitchen. It sounds sort of goofy at the same time, but creepy. Now, the graveyard story wasn't that crazy because her house was right next to the town church. And in theory, the old graveyard would have been right next to the church underneath where her house was. So that was feasible. And some people claimed that work was being done on the property just before these faces appeared, and that a number of bones that had been discovered were then collected and taken to the town cemetery, the normal one, which is always outside of the main town. This is true of most Spanish towns where you find the cemetery is located outside of the town, and they were put in sort of a common grave. So some parapsychologists suggested that this may have been the cause of this, the appearance of the faces, some sort of disruption that caused these spirits to surface. Now, with all the attention it was getting, the Franco government got in on the act, and they sent some officials there to investigate. They eventually said they didn't like what they saw. They thought there was something up, and they even threatened the local mayor, saying that he would be removed from office if he didn't bring things under control and declare the scene a hoax. The claim was deemed false in general, and Belmas became sort of a laughingstock to some people. This final verdict was that they were basically making all this up, and that some local painter or photographer or both were playing this trick. They were behind it all. And with that, the story sort of died and was almost forgotten as quickly as it appeared. But it wasn't that simple. And that's because this story has sort of cropped up again and again over the decades. And there have been a lot of studies, and a lot of experts have gone there, and a lot of books have been written, because a lot of people don't buy the original story, sort of dismissing it as a fake. They believe there's something to this, and they argue a lot of things, like, for example, the bodies or the faces actually transform over the years, and they look different, or they move a little bit. At least that's what they say. Now, there are two main positions here. You have, naturally, the skeptics or the debunkers, and they have a number of explanations for what they say is a fake. Basically, most of them say that the images were somehow painted. The debate within that argument is about how they were painted, how they were formed. Several studies have included lots of chemical analysis of the images. In some cases, some elements of substances that are sometimes used in paint, things like lead, appear to exist, but in others, nothing really related to painting does. Then there are others who suggest that it might have been a combination of paint with some chemical agent which produces the ghostly appearances, and even produces the slow way in which they show up on the surface of the floor. And then there are some who talk about pareidolia, which is that tendency for us to sort of impose some meaningful interpretation of things that we see that aren't clear at all, sort of the way we locate objects in the clouds. In other words, we see faces on that floor because our brains are designed to look for things like that. And now the believers have a whole bunch of other theories. One of the biggest ones is a thing called thoughtography, which is this paranormal ability to project an image on a surface by way of thought. The thinking here, and if you'll excuse the redundancy, is that somehow the images were being produced subconsciously by Maria Gomez. Why is that? Well, no one seems to know. Maybe it had something to do with the cemetery underneath. The house itself was also said to have sort of a horrible past. If we are to go by what they've said, there was possibly a massacre or a multiple homicide from the Spanish Civil War. Another says it used to be a brothel. Now, if things are true, including the cemetery, then it may have had a long history of suffering. And then it may have been a poltergeist, as we mentioned before, but it would have been a quiet, very calm one because they don't make any noise or anything like that. Or some kind of a parapsychological phenomenon which hasn't been explained. And as I was telling you, at least this is what some say, that these images actually sort of move a little bit and transform, they change. You can see these claims by experts, and they'll show you what these images were like before and after, and there is a definite evolution there, even though it's been very gradual. And there are some claims that overall some 3,000 faces over the years have come and gone, and that's a lot. And both sides are adamant in their postures, which is normal because both sides are somewhat predisposed to believe in their opinion from the outset. The skeptics accuse the believers of ignoring the obvious and say they are trying to make financial gains by perpetuating this myth, doing interviews, publishing books, when deep down they know it's not true. Either that or they just convince themselves that it's true despite all the obvious evidence that says otherwise. Believers, on the other hand, point to the fact that no study, and there have been a fairly good number of them, has successfully disproved their authenticity, or at least has not proved the hoax, which seems to be the case. And the biggest point, if it really is a fake, to this day, no one knows definitively how they were done. What was the technique used? And so this appears to be true. In other words, no one seems to know how this was done. They'll say it's a fake, but they don't seem to have a 100% guarantee or someone coming up and saying, let me show you how this was done. A couple of theories out there, but this is important to take into consideration. As we said, the central figure here is and always has been Maria Gomez. According to many who believe that something strange or unusual has happened here, something paranormal, they say that there is a relationship between Maria and the house, and by association with the faces. And in fact, after years of little or no attention being given to this town, apparently in the late 80s, Maria had to be hospitalized in the city of Jaén, I believe it was, for a week or two. And the reports were that the faces actually became more somber, sadder, as a result of her absence. Maria herself passed away in 2004 at the age of 85, and the faces are said to have been slowly fading ever since. And that's a brief summary of a very long and detailed story. As I said, whole books have been written about this. What are my thoughts here? I don't know. The rational side of me says that there has to be a logical explanation, but the child within me hopes there's something supernatural, because I love these things. And even if it's a fake, you have to admit it's a really good one. The images are pretty creepy, and whoever made them did a great job of fooling experts over the decades. But anyway, be you a believer or not, you should know that you can still visit the faces of Beldmeth in this town. Not many haunted houses afford that opportunity, so that in itself makes it worthwhile. It's been on my checklist for quite some time, and doing this podcast has only sort of rekindled my interest in going there, so I'm going to try to do it. Pepe, my friend, said he'd never go, and I know why. He's a believer in these things and doesn't want to be unnerved, but hopefully I'll have a chance to stop by one day, and if I do, I will certainly do a podcast to tell you what that experience was like. And so that's Happy Halloween to you. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain-Domain. Please feel free to leave us any comments, because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain-Domain, we greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.